Lists and sticky notes are not going to solve your procrastination issues. And that's because typically procrastination stems from one of two categories. The job is to figure out which category you are falling into, so then you can apply the right action steps. And I am going to map this all out for you in this episode of Now What? Welcome to the only therapy podcast that can actually change your life. I'm therapist Amy Neufeld, and I do things a little differently around here. I'm going to give you clinical insight you've never heard before. And best of all, I'm going to tell you what to actually do to change your fucking life. This is Now What? Jamie, are you a procrastinator?
Not on the little stuff. I am so good at making appointments, responding to emails. It's only like the big stuff, and it's only sometimes.
Okay. I'll just put you on the spot right here on this very popular podcast where everybody is listening. Any idea why in the times that you do procrastinate that might be happening?
I really think it's only when I feel super overwhelmed. That's when I tend to put stuff off. I just freeze.
Okay. So it's just when you've got a lot going on?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I would say that's a lot of people. And you know what? That's a lot of the solutions that are out there. I hear all the time, a lot from parents or from individuals themselves, I'm just lazy. I just don't feel like it. I will tell you, there is always a reason for behavior. Just like procrastination, there is a reason for it. So it isn't laziness. And as you're experiencing, I think many people come into my office thinking it's overwhelm or they just have too much on their plate. And that happens a lot, but sometimes that's not what it is. I had a client a long time ago come in and she couldn't pay her bills. I mean, she could pay her bills. She could literally had the money to pay her bills. But she couldn't physically open the envelope that came to her door. She tried organizing bins. She tried little bleeps that went off on her phone to be like, pay the bill on Tuesday at 9 o'clock. And she still couldn't bring herself to do it. Those were overwhelm solutions. And it wasn't getting the job done. They did not work for her. The problem wasn't the task. When she came into my office presenting with this, we went deeper. We decided to go into the why. So I started talking to her and we started discovering something really important. Growing up in her teenage years, her dad, mostly her parents, would let her know that she just wasn't capable of doing the adult things. Her dad even said to her one time, gosh, I hope you get married early so your husband can take over your finances. So she learned at a really young age that that was something she wasn't capable of. The bills weren't envelopes. They were actually sort of identity tests for her. So every time that she avoided her envelope that came in, her bill, her brain would say, see, I knew it. That's identity exposure procrastination. Her brain was telling her, I knew you were right. You're not good enough. You can't do this. And yeah, so there's really two basic types of procrastination. There's that overwhelm procrastination when there's too much stuff going on. And there's then that procrastination that's a little bit deeper, and that takes a little bit more digging.
Okay, wait. So I cannot relate. I had no idea about the identity thing. I can't relate to that at all because I'm a middle child, but I was also kind of the older child as well, the oldest, because my older sister has Mowat-Wilson syndrome. Her name is Kelly. So her and Mowat-Wilson is very low functioning, high needs. And so I was the eldest and also a middle child. So that combination meant I was on my own a lot. And so I grew up having to figure things out. And I actually think that was such a benefit to me. So when you say that people have an identity problem where they feel like they're not capable of doing things, like that kind of blows my mind because I really always thought that procrastination was like a discipline or a motivation issue.
And a lot of people do. And Jamie, you also learned about your identity early, just that you were very capable. And what did that do? That motivated you to do things and to get things done. You knew you could, so you did. And you knew you could, so you sought out to prove yourself right, unknowingly. That's what's happening in this identity exposure procrastination, just in reverse. And you're right. A lot of people do relate to this discipline problem in this, what I call overwhelm procrastination. And that's the stuff that's out there, right? That's a lot of the solutions that's going on is to address. If you scroll through TikTok or Instagram, you'll see a lot of coaches or people out there helping with that discipline problem. But procrastination's also usually it's an emotional regulation strategy. So the brain is not avoiding the task. It's avoiding the feeling attached to the task. And that's where I go back to there's always a reason for behavior. It is not inherent laziness. You'll ask every therapist out there and they'll probably all give you the same answer. There's no such thing as laziness. And I know it drives people crazy, but there's definitely a reason to not do something. So I mentioned the two different kinds. We've got overwhelm procrastination and identity exposure procrastination. I'm going to say this word procrastination so much, it's going to start to melt. Procrastination.
No. Oh, it becomes like a non-word.
I know. I'm just going to put off saying it. I'm going to procrastinate. Let's start with overwhelm. I think that's the one, like you said, most people relate to, you relate to it. Basically, it's cognitive overload. It's too many tabs open in your brain. So I'm going to give you a metaphor real quick to describe each of them, and then we'll dive deeper into overwhelm. If you picture a backpack with too many things in it, it's too heavy, and you're trying to hike up a mountain, that's overwhelm procrastination. How do you deal with that? You lighten your load. You take things out and you move on. When we're talking about identity procrastination, it's like a spotlight. You're on stage and you're right in the spotlight. And that is dealing with being seen, sort of that fear of being seen. So we want to dim the light.
Okay, I have a question. Was this why you and I talked about this a little last week? So I'm very proud of my desktop. If I ever have to share my screen on a Zoom call, everyone is impressed by my desktop because it's beautiful. There's nothing there except for a couple folders. One of my folders is actually called March Desktop. So all of my screenshots, everything, all the random files, all the mess, I just highlight everything and drag it into my little folder so that my desktop looks clean and beautiful. It basically is like a junk drawer for my desktop. Is that why I do this? Because just the visual, instead of going through everything and figuring out what I need to delete, what I should file someplace else, I just throw it all in this cute little folder and then they never look at it.
Sure. So that's the equivalent of me, my 13-year-old self, shoving everything in her closet and saying, your room is clean. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I hate to tell you, but you're procrastinating, right? You're just pushing it aside to deal with later. So you are lightening your load and you're managing what you can do in front of you. You're prioritizing, but you are not dealing with the thing that you need to deal with, which is procrastination. Just to
Or is it cleverness?
Or is it cleverness? I'll go. How is it cleverness? Is that it goes away? So what I can't see?
It goes away. I do the same thing with my inbox. This is actually a pro tip, and you're probably going to tell everyone not to do this as a therapist, but I'm sure we've all heard of Inbox Zero. And remember last week you got a new email because we launched your website and we launched your podcast. And so you have a shiny new email and every day you send us a text or an email and you're constantly saying how wonderful it feels to have nothing in this new inbox.
Yes.
It's so freeing. And I told you that my hack for that, for those of us who can't just light our old email on fire and start over, start an email folder, name it old inbox. I always put a one by it so that it's up at the top. One old inbox. And I had like 70,000 emails because I've had my email for a long time. I just dragged them all into that folder and now they all went away. And I have a zero inbox. There's nothing in it. And as stuff comes in, I unsubscribe and it's like starting over.
That's wonderful. And then I would say the task at hand would be that whole email thing to go through, unless you just want to burn it and be done, but you're keeping it for a reason because you're probably unsure there's stuff to go through in there. So the task out hand that you could maybe are procrastinating, maybe not. Maybe it's just not on the priority list and it's not a task you need to do right now. If it is something that you need to get to and you're not, that's procrastination. If it's something that's there on the list and you don't need to get it right now, that's not procrastination. It's a great hack for clearing your mind, clearing your email. That's beautiful. Like, everybody take that one. If that old email box is sitting there and you have to get to it and you keep putting it off, that's what we're talking about. That's procrastination. So just in that metaphor, that backpack would be lightening the load, and the spotlight is sort of softening the light because it deals with being seen, the safety of being seen. So let's go into overwhelm procrastination. This is when the brain experiences cognitive overload. The task will feel too big, too complex, unclear where to start. You've been there, like, oh my gosh, I have so much to do. I don't know what to do. Again, we're not talking about the things that don't need to get done. These are the things that are like all priority and we don't know how to start. In this case, we're talking about task friction, not identity at all. So the solution is structure or habit change. I'll give you some really good nuggets in the action steps on how to do this. But like I said, there's a lot out there with the cute pens to buy or the calendars to put on your wall. I got a great suggestion from our producer, Andrea, which we'll go into in the action steps. But there's some stuff out there that really works well as long as we're dealing with overwhelm procrastination. If we try and fix identity exposure procrastination with a structure solution, it won't stick. Okay, so it's really important to understand which one. And I do have a little diagnostic tool I can help you guys with to explore. But let's first dive into identity exposure procrastination. And that's exactly what it sounds like, exposing your identity. Identity exposure procrastination occurs when a task threatens a person's self of identity, competence, or yes, belonging. I always go into belonging because we are wired to belong and we are social creatures. And when anything starts to press on that and we get unsure or feel unsafe, we're going to react to it. Procrastination protects from identity exposure. So it's acting as a protective tool. If it thinks, oh my gosh, I don't want to be seen, and actually doing a task, I'll dive into it, can feel like that, being seen and I don't want to, then the procrastination is trying to help us, believe it or not. It actually becomes a statement on who you are. So the voice in your head isn't saying, oh my gosh, there's so much to do. Where do I start? It's saying, what's wrong with me? I should be able to do this. If I do this, it's not going to look right, right? So those are the things that people do in identity. And there's two layers of identity exposure procrastination. They both deal with negative self-talk. But the first layer in is performance exposure. And that is the fear of getting it wrong, basically. There's a lot of perfectionism or fear of criticism involved with that, right? So this usually comes out when you're dealing with any type of creative expression or presenting or writing or even sending an email. You want to get it right so you're not diving into it. I know that for me, I have this thing about putting stuff up on my walls. It's so permanent, but it's not, right? And I take forever to decide on the paint color or the wallpaper or the little, or where a painting should go. It just doesn't get up and it sits there because I want it to look perfect.
Wait, this is so funny that you said that. I was going to ask you, does perfectionism play a role in this? Because I never thought of that before, but I'm the same way. We had family over this weekend and everyone's like, wow, Jamie, I love your house. It's so beautiful. It's so white. My house, I do love decorating with white. I love wearing white. But I said to one of them, I'm like, I think the reason my house has become so white, white furniture, white everything, is because I love color, but I'm so afraid to commit to it that I haven't made any decisions on where to bring it in because the commitment feels huge. And so I put it off. So over the past 5 years, my house has become so white.
Well, I'm glad you love white. Yes, that's exactly it. And you use the word put it off. That's procrastination. And we don't even realize it until it gets too much. But yeah, I can relate to that completely. It's just we can't make the decision and we want to get it right. And so we don't end up doing it. And that is a type of procrastination that deals with identity, but it's performance exposure.
I love that you're shining a light on this because I don't think most people know there's different types of procrastination. And you're right. All the advice out there is for someone like me who has overwhelmed procrastination. And so there's a lot of tasks, breaking things into small steps, like all that advice is out there, but that's not going to help someone with identity procrastination.
No, it isn't. And I'm really glad you brought that up, Jamie, because many people, then it goes even further into this self-hatred or negative self-talk. why don't these things work for me? Why don't those cute little pads of paper or those beautiful color sticky tabs work? I'm still not getting it done. And that is because you do not need a structural fix. You need a different kind of fix to help you through this.
Like it yep. really shakes their identity then.
Absolutely. And there aren't a lot of people out there, I don't think, enough talking about procrastination as an identity piece. Most people talk about it as this function of cognitive overload, which exists a lot. It is out there, but we need to explore this other part. And I'm going into another layer to this, and I'm gonna dedicate this layer to somebody that is so near and dear to my heart that I hope she's listening, and I know she is actually, and this is going to hit hard for her. And I am so happy to be delivering this. Again, it isn't out there enough, and it has to do with identity confirmation. This is at a much deeper level. Procrastination can reinforce an existing negative identity belief. Avoidance actually reinforces that existing belief. So an example of a core belief are things like, I'm not capable, I'm failing, something's wrong with me. When somebody is feeling those things, where you're going to see most of their procrastination, I mean, it's going to be all over the place, but you're going to see they can't get laundry done. They don't do the dishes. They don't pay their bills. They're not washing their face. There is a level of taking care of basic needs that cannot get done. And this avoidance creates a loop. So there is the task, they avoid it, then there's shame, and then there's identity confirmation. See, I can't even do basic things. I am incapable of living a life. I'm not worthy. And they're proving it to themselves because, oddly, people actually go out into the world and they're looking for ways to reinforce their core beliefs. They're looking for that data to support the way they feel about themselves. And this is painful. And then they don't even understand why they can't get it done. And it's this vicious loop. And shame actually plays a big role in this. Shame is one of the most powerful emotions identified to this type of procrastination. Shame's a social emotion. It's closely tied to concerns about judgment and rejection and embarrassment and belonging. And so many people believe that procrastination proves something about them. I'm lazy, I'm unmotivated, and I lack discipline. So what's happening there is something very different. And the brain is protecting the identity and belonging, because if a task feels like it could expose a weakness, right, or some sort of inadequacy, the nervous system chooses the safer option, and that's avoidance. Because the person, it's not because they don't care. It's being seen in that moment feels dangerous. So it shut down. That is a form of safety that our nervous system will do, and it shuts it down. It's this bizarre, crazy loop that you find yourself in. You would say to that person, well, then just do the dishes and you'll feel better about yourself. And it's not that simple. It is so buried deep. This is about to solve this procrastination is not about the calendar and the sticky tabs and the lists and the little bells going off. This one is about self-worth. And okay. We don't usually link self-worth to getting up and doing the task.
That is so huge. And oh my gosh, my mind's just blown because I never thought there was this component to it. And I am recognizing this in people I know, even though I can't relate to the identity part of it. And I just think this is really powerful. But what are we supposed to do? Like, how on both sides of the issue, overwhelm, identity, how do we stop procrastinating then?
Well, let me tell you, because there are probably some people out there going, huh, am I overwhelmed? Or is there something a little deeper here?
Or maybe both.
Or maybe
some
both.
Some people have both going on.
Sure, you can have a little bit of both. Sometimes you just got too much on your plate, and other times you're operating from a system that is just kind of trying to protect you and feeling that they do not want the exposure. Here's a quick little diagnostic question and answer that I made up, a diagnostic tool to help you decide which way you're leaning. Is it more in that overwhelm, or is it more in the identity exposure procrastination? There are three easy questions you can ask yourself. I actually did this with somebody last night because they were sure theirs was just overwhelm. And I asked the three questions and they were like, okay, yep, mm-hmm. This is identity exposure. So the question number one is, what is the voice in your head saying? Is it saying, oh my gosh, where do I start? This is too much. That's overwhelm. You're an overwhelm procrastination, and structure solutions will help you. If the voice in your head is saying, what is wrong with me? I should be able to do this. Everybody else can handle this. It's not going to be good enough. They're going to laugh at me. That's identity exposure. So it's either that perfectionism or fear of failure, wanting to get it right, or it is that shame. I'm not good enough, self-worth. So that's your first question. The second question would be, would a plan solve this? If someone sat down with me and broke it down into steps, would I be able to fly? If the answer is yes, that is overwhelm procrastination. If the answer is no, you're looking at identity exposure procrastination. The last question you can ask yourself is, who's in your head? When you're thinking about doing the task, is there somebody else you're imagining? Anybody? If you're imagining people noticing or judging, or that person will be so proud that I did this, that's identity exposure, because other people show up in your mind. If it's overwhelm procrastination, it's about the task. Nobody else exists. Identity exposure procrastination is about an audience in your head. So overwhelm feels like busy brain, scattered thinking, restless energy, and you've got identity exposure with a heaviness, a sinking feeling, a wanting to hide, a shutting down.
I have a question. You always hear about people, and I've done this a couple times with like a dentist appointment. I'm usually really good about it, but you hear about people putting off big appointments. They don't schedule their mammogram because they're afraid they're going to get bad news. Like, it's so scary. So they put it off, which feels counterproductive, but you hear about this a lot. So if it's fear-based, if someone's putting something off because they're afraid of what's going to happen when they do it, they're afraid of bad news. And I think this really happens with health issues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where do they fall?
Again, a little bit of a two-prong there. So if you're talking about what you're saying and somebody scared to hear news and they don't want to schedule something like a mammogram because they don't want to get the results, they're too afraid. And then you have somebody along the same lines, I can say to my, you know, personally speaking, not wanting to book the dentist appointment for fear of, and we look, it's always going in deeper. So the fear of the dentist for me, after questioning if I were to sit with my therapist or sit with myself, it would be this exposure piece. Like, oh my gosh, I know I don't floss enough. And what is he going to have to do? And it's the pain and the not wanting to go. And the mammogram has to do with the fear. We're talking about avoidance. And so when we really just need to peel back the layer and the layer and the layer. Procrastination is putting something off. And so when we look at the reason why we're putting something off, that's where we're going to get into this. Okay, this is fear-based. We can go into fears and how to conquer them. Certainly, we can dive in deeper to a whole new thing, but I will say this would fall under this identity exposure because it's dealing with something that you yourself are afraid to go towards. So we would have to look at the fear and how to conquer the fear. And once you're dealing with something at a deeper level that deals with identity, yourself, then that gets released. So we have to release whatever is holding us back. And in this case, it would be the fear. And just really quickly, because I want to, but you would ask yourself three questions there too. And that is, what is the absolute worst thing that's going to happen? Then you give it a number 1 to 10 on the scale of, you know, could that actually happen? And then after that, you said, all right, well, what if the actual worst thing were to come true? And that's how, I mean, that takes a long discussion for us, but in a real quick nutshell, that's what I do with fears. And again, when we are giving the tools to believe in ourselves and to know we can handle something, then we feel connected to ourselves, and then we can have this empowered feeling and we make the appointment. So it's not necessarily the same exact thing as exposing identity, but it's confronting it to yourself. It's looking at a fear and conquering that yourself. So it is a type of putting off. It's an avoidance for a reason that's deeper than, it's not overwhelm. I just have too much to do. I'm not getting to it. It's on a more personal level. So it would fall under the identity exposure, but it's more connected to self.
I can understand that. It's almost like saying, I am so afraid that the dentist is going to hurt and I can't handle pain. I'm not brave enough. I'm not strong enough. Same thing with finding out you have breast cancer or something else, or getting a colonoscopy. colonoscopy, they don't think they can handle a diagnosis mentally. They can't handle it. They're not strong enough. They're not healthy enough.
Yes. Yes. And we, again, I'll go back to, there's always a reason for behavior. And a, you know, common answer to getting your mammogram done or making that dentist appointment is, oh my God, I have so much, I don't have time to think about that right now. The fear is a little bit easier to admit, right? So it's not an identity crisis moment, but still we need to dive deeper and have you help connect to that fear so that you can push forward and make the call.
So then what do we do? What is the now what? And is the now what different if it's overwhelm, if it's fear or identity based? What do we do next?
Okay. I just love the two words, now what? I really do. Every time I hear them, every time I say them, it is, I've got all this juicy, yummy, good information that I just gave you. Great. Wonderful. Now what? And I love saying it in session. I love saying it here because it's action. It's movement. We get to change. All right, let's go in. Now what? Procrastination when it's overwhelm. I will tell you, I'm going to give a little nod to Andrea, our producer here, because there's one where it's like habit changing, right? And this is, again, we're talking a lot about structure stuff, lists and calendars and post-its and timers, all of those kinds of things will help in this category. And we were talking yesterday and we were talking about all the things that we have to do. And I have a book that I write things down in. And she suggested, and I love this, and this goes under now what, an action step titled post-it. So it is make it visible. So she uses a whiteboard and she writes everything up on a whiteboard through that she has to do for the day. And I would recommend not erasing each item as you do it, but just drawing a line through it because you want to see what you've accomplished. That's just a sneaky little dopamine hit for you. And Andrea is showing us hers right now. Look at that. I also like the color combo. That is super. She has two colors helping her out there. So,
and now I'm overwhelmed because, my gosh, Andrea, that's a lot of stuff. So I would erase it. And then
don't erase it.
No, I'm joking. Okay, I would file it. I would put it in a drawer.
Right, there you go.
And then buy a new one that's clean.
There you go. There's your white house. There's your clean desktop. There's your clean mailbox. So we want to post it. Then the next action step for this overwhelm procrastination would be what I call the first brick rule. So people procrastinate when they think about finishing the whole building, right? Oh my God, I got to put up this whole thing. Well, it starts with one brick. So it's that first brick mentality. So it isn't, I've got to finish the entire paper. No, it's, I've got to open up the document. I want that literal first step, not I'll just write one paragraph. I have to open my computer. We're looking at momentum, getting momentum going. So what is that very first brick that you have to do? If it's pay the bills, maybe it's just opening the envelope and leaving it. And that might seem like too much of a baby step, but I promise you when you're really stuck in procrastination, just think, what is the first brick? You don't have to stop there, but just manage your thought that way. The next one is the 10-minute contract. And a lot of what's out there is set a timer for a break. And I like setting a timer for an action. So if you're going to do something for 10 minutes, and 10 minutes is a great amount of time because it's enough time for you to get going a little bit, but not too much time where you're like, all right, did that, check, next. And you push it aside, I'll do more later. It gets your wheels going so that you can get some traction. You're going to tell yourself, I am only going to do this for 10 minutes. And when that timer goes off, I can guilt-free leave or I can keep going. Either way is fine. When the timer goes off, you have to ask yourself, do I want to keep going? That's the only question that you need to ask yourself. Guilt-free is no, absolutely not. I'm going to put this down for now. I did my 10 minutes, or you take another minute or so. What usually ends up happening is that 10 minutes gave you just enough to get off the bench and start moving. And the last one in this category is the body double. I really like this one, and it's using social energy. Body doubling works because humans regulate behavior socially, not just individually. A body double is just another person in the room. So they're not helping you. They're not doing anything. They don't even have to talk to you. They can be sitting on the side knitting. Knitting's a thing. But the person in the room can be doing nothing but being there. It could be a friend sitting with you while you organize your paperwork and they're doing your own things. My sister will come over when she has a lot of work to do and just sit in my living room and do work because she needs people around. It's the equivalent of going to a coffee shop and doing your work. It's not just for the free Wi-Fi, but it's the energy around you because there's people. So this works really well because it changes our nervous system state. When we're alone with an overwhelming task, the brain can sort of drift into avoidance. When someone else is present, a lot of different things happen. We've got attention that increases, accountability increases, motivation may increase. The brain shifts into social engagement. So it's just a different nervous system play at work.
For me, that would help with accountability, but also the social aspect of it. You kind of forget what you're doing. And, you know, we had a party at our house. I was sitting here. We had family out of town. And I'm like, wait, I need to get these flowers and vases and like cut them and do all of this stuff. Like, sit with me. Let's talk. And it went by so fast because we were chatting. And now arranging flowers is definitely more enjoyable than paying bills. But for me, the distraction would be so helpful.
Yeah. For sure. And what you're explaining is it's this co-regulation thing. It's systems sort of regulating together and you get the jobs done that way. All right, let's dive in, shall we, to the solutions or the help for the identity exposure procrastination. And here we're talking actually about changing pattern. And there's a really big difference between habit and pattern, which will be for another podcast completely. But pattern work is sort of the, you know, if the habit is the behavior, the pattern is sort of why we do that behavior or keeping us in that habit. So the pattern is what keeps the habit going. The first one I'm going to give you, it's actually two sort of together. It's name the exposure and pattern break. So when you name the exposure, you're just going to say out loud what this task is making you feel like. I can't even do the dishes, I suck. I don't even know how to do the dishes, I'm nothing. I want you to say the shame, name the shame, I guess, so that you can speak it and hear it and feel it out loud. And then I want you to do one thing that might interrupt the loop. So that's the pattern break. So you might be bold enough if there's a pile of dishes in your sink to wash one dish, or you might just take out your dishwashing gloves, or which I do not use. I just thought that might be a thing people do, or turn on the water and wet the sponge and get it ready. And that's enough. This goal here is not task oriented. It's not about completion. It is about challenging an identity or pattern disruption, right? So if you're saying, I can't even do the dishes, I'm such a loser, you walking over to the sink is like, yeah, I'm at the sink, bitch, right? So you're sort of standing up to that belief.
Well, okay? Also, is it helpful? And maybe this is the petty queen in me, but is it helpful to be like, wait, I'm not a loser. I don't suck. Dishes suck. Like, I'm not the one who sucks. Dishes suck. Of course, I don't want to do it. And then you walk up to the dishes and you're like, you guys suck. So I'm going to clean you and put you away. Is that helpful?
Well, I just love that second part. I think when you're in this state of mind, we're talking real shame here. It's debilitating. So even to expose yourself to nobody out there, remember, you've got an audience in your head. You're imagining everybody can see you. So saying the shame out loud is sometimes a really tall order. And then going up to the sink, oh my gosh, we're talking real avoidance here. So yes, go ahead, try that out, guys. Walk over to that sink and be like, Dish, you suck. I'm not the one that sucks. Sometimes shame is so heavy that any action feels impossible. So these other two action steps, the first is called witness method. This is sort of a modified body double because we're not ready for that much exposure here. We're not going to be with somebody when we have a pile of dishes in the sink or piles of laundry and nobody's coming over while we're washing our face. So the shame is so strong that we're not getting up to move. So the goal isn't going to be productivity. We're going to bring someone else in the moment, but in our minds. So for example, you might say, I think I'm going to text Amy that I'm going to start the dishes. And then I'd like you to try and text her with, I'm starting the thing I've been avoiding. I'll text you when the step is done. So the first one is enough just to say, I'm going to call or text Amy when I finish the job, or call and text her that I can't get all of this done. If you can, I'd like you to actually do the text. Connection reduces shame because shame can only survive in secrecy. It can only live in secrecy. So if we expose shame a little bit, it goes down. So if you're saying, hey, I'm doing this thing and I'm feeling like I just can't get it done, but I'm going to try. And when I finish this small little task, I'm going to let you know. Your shame is like melting. It gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So that is one step to try. There's an offshoot to this. If that is a little difficult to do because the exposure is too intense, you're going to do a modified version, and that is the younger self-witness. This is reconnection to self. So the exercise is to find one photo of yourself. I like going to a childhood photo, a little young self of you. You can go to your teenage years, any happy moment you have, a proud moment. There's something about going to yourself as a child, though. You're going to look at that person in the picture, and then you're going to ask yourself, what would I say to this person if they were struggling the way I am right now? Often the response is, you're trying. You're not a failure. You'll figure this out. You're going to look at that little girl, that little boy in that picture and say, it's okay. You're going to figure it out. And then step number two is you're going to say that very same thing to the you now. You'll say, you got this. It's okay. You're trying. You will figure it out. This works because it collapses identity, shame identity. The photo reconnects you to you. And it also activates self-compassion. And it is so strong because when shame is too loud, sometimes the first step is not doing the task. The first step is remembering who you are outside of the task.
I absolutely love this. This is so wonderful. I think this could be helpful for all inner child work. I'm a very visual person, and I feel like people who even weren't visual people before are becoming visual people because of social media and how everything is so sight focused. And I feel like this would be helpful to see a picture, because how can you be mad at a child? How can you yell at a child? Even though you know it's yourself, something softens in you when you see a kid. And you can't shame them. You can't yell at them. You can't blame anything on them. And it reminds you that you were once this like innocent kid who had their whole future ahead of them. And how would you have wanted an adult to speak to you back then?
Yeah. And I started to feel, even as I am telling you and everybody out there, what it's like to look at that little self of you, that little girl, that little boy, and look at that person and say, it's okay. I mean, even me repeating it, I get emotional because my goodness, it is okay. And then to look at yourself in the mirror or in the microwave, if you don't want that strong of a reflection, and say to yourself, it's okay. I got you. So showing up for yourself is really big. Okay. So I gave you a lot. We've basically got two different kinds of procrastination, the overwhelm and the identity exposure. And remember, in the overwhelm, it's going to go more towards structure. So you're going to do either the 10-minute contract, the first brick rule, you're going to post it so you can see what you have to do, or the body double. Just go out there and use some social energy. If it is the other, if it's identity exposure procrastination, we're not necessarily talking about the task, productive action going on. We're going to heal it from a deeper level so you can work. And that's with either the name, the exposure, and the pattern break, or the witness method, whether it's texting somebody and telling them, or going to your younger self and letting them know they're okay.
Okay, so I have to ask you, I know, because as a therapist, I feel like you're not allowed to do any of the bad things that we all get to do. That's why I'm not a therapist, so I can do some bad things. But you can't, right? So I have to ask you, you know I'm kidding. You're human.
I mean, I'm laughing because I have fit so many of these on this paper.
I know.
And it just makes me a better therapist.
Exactly. And so you're human. So I need to know, when was the last time you procrastinated?
When was the last time I procrastinated? When was the last time I procrastinated was, there's so many. You know, I have a thing about, and I've talked about this, about doing the dishes. I really do. I think I don't mind that they sit there for a moment, and I like engaging in my kids. And so I feel like I tell myself it's because I'm prioritizing kids, but there is a delay in the house chores that need to get done.
Okay, dishes are gross, number one. All the things that we can do and no one's figured this out besides a dishwasher, you still have to clean the crap out. I remember we threw this huge birthday party for one of my friends when she turned 50. She's much older than I am. And we had this big party. It was at an event space that one of her friends owned. The next morning, I came back to help clean up and I was on dish duty, but the hot water heater broke overnight. So I was using cold water and there were probably 50 plates. And I remember putting my hands in the water and it was cold and I can feel people's food that they didn't eat. And I'm washing these dishes wanting to cry because I'm a little bit of a germaphobe. I feel like all of the listeners are like, wow, Jamie needs to be in therapy. I'm a little bit of a germaphobe, so I'm touching all this cold, wet food and I feel traumatized. So now I have a 14-year-old daughter who gets to do the dishes because, I mean, that's why we have kids. So no one should be doing dishes. This is why you have children.
Your kids. Jamie, you did not help my motivation to do the dishes. Like now I'm really
I'm sorry.
The slimy cold water food stuff. No.
In fact, all the good you did with this episode for all the listeners, I just totally undid it. And now everyone's going to procrastinate.
Wait, Jamie, hold on. Back to our chat. What is it?
GPT. My bestie.
I just asked it. I said, can you do the dishes for me? Because you said there should be something out there besides a dishwasher. And it said, I can't physically do your dishes. I can help you get them done with less friction, though. Try this. Put on a 10-minute timer. Fill the sink with hot soapy water. Trash first, then cups. I mean, it's telling me the list. It's being my person.
And it's using your words, friction. Okay, let's play a game then. This game is called Procrastinate or Detonate.
Wait,
do you know
what?
How I do that? Procrastinate or Detonate.
Okay, I'm in.
Can I rhyme that?
Can I detonate everything?
No, wait.
Detonate is good.
Detonate's good. So you're either procrastinating or you're detonating, which means you are like
doing it immediately, right?
Yep. Okay, so you have to answer right away. You can't even think.
Okay,
so you're going to answer right away without thinking whether you'd put this task off. So you'd procrastinate or you'd detonate and do it right away.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Number one, respond to your ex's text.
Procrastinate.
Really?
Really?
What? Okay, second one, schedule your mammogram.
Detonate.
That's the right answer. Okay. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
You have a date over to your house for dinner and you're eating Italian. Not eating an Italian. Well, maybe you're eating an Italian. You're eating Italian and you spill red sauce on your shirt. When do you get the stain out? Do you procrastinate or detonate?
My gosh, that's so funny. I pre-detonate.
Pre-detonate?
So
wait, does that mean you take your shirt off at dinner?
Seriously.
I'm on a date. You're on a date.
I'm on a date.
At your house.
I know. At my house. Well, we're not
either. She comes to your house. You make Italian. You make something Italian.
So many things are wrong with this picture.
Right.
You're
entertaining. You brought a date back to your house.
That's great. Okay. I'm trying to get in that fantasy land first. So let me stay there for a minute. I don't care about the stain in that moment. So in that moment, I'm going to procrastinate and not for any other reason than I want to stay in the date. But in any other situation, I'm procrastinating but I'm pre-detonating. I think I've come up with a new one.
What is that?
I will like put something on like a stain stick or whatever. So that's detonate. Bam. But I won't take care of it for so long. And you know what, Jamie? I think it is not just task oriented. I think it is more, I'm not going to get it out. It's going to ruin the shirt and it's not going to be okay.
That sounds like an identity problem.
I know.
You should talk to a therapist about that. This is a metaphor. I feel like this is a metaphor for procrastination in general, because if you don't handle stuff right away, the stain sets and it gets worse and it's a bigger problem later.
Well, you're turning into a therapist because all we do is talk in metaphors. Procrastinate or detonate. Return an Amazon package.
Procrastinate.
Really?
I'm pretty good. I don't really procrastinate often. I hate returns. Amy, it is embarrassing. My house, I should probably have like a garage sale. I have so much new stuff, even though it's easy because all you do is take it to Whole Foods. Like,
I'm so good at it.
I'm so bad at returning things.
I'm the queen. My son yells at me all the time. He's like, stop buying stuff if you're going to return it. But I do. I'm really good at it. All right. Number two, buying a birthday present for someone.
Detonate. Okay. Yes. So gift giving is my love language. I wish I could make money like buying gifts for people. I will do it right away because it's so fun.
That's beautiful. No, I wonder if people would relate to this. Gift giving is a big thing for me too. I am all about it. Every time I'm out, like I pick things up, it's a little bit of a problem, but I do love gift giving. There's something about the birthday. Again, this goes into identity exposure procrastination because I want to get it right. It's their birthday and I want them to really like it. All my friends make fun of me when I give a present on a birthday. So I have my grandma, we call Bubba. She's not living anymore, but everybody calls me Bubba when I give a present because you open the present and you haven't even lifted the first bit of tape off the wrapping paper. And I'm like, you know what? I have the receipt. You're not going to like it. It's not going to fit. I don't think. Do you want me to return it for you? Okay, your last one. Cleaning the fridge.
Detonate.
Okay, you took some time on that
one.
I'm going to question that. I challenge if you detonate on that.
Do you know why? I'm currently overwhelmed. Today, I'm currently overwhelmed. Typically, I love cleaning the fridge because, I mean, your listeners must think I'm super like crazy because I how much I love organization, but I love fridges where you open it and it looks really pretty. Like the colors look really good and it's really clean. So I love cleaning the fridge and organizing it, like all my daughter's bubblers and how colorful and poppy it all looks so great. So typically I would love to do it and say detonate, but today I'm feeling so overwhelmed. So when you said clean the fridge, I literally had a visceral reaction. So friends, don't procrastinate following Amy on social media. Head to @AmyNeufeldTherapy on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Amy, you're everywhere.
Email me if you need, if you want, if you desire at hello@AmyNeufeldTherapy.com with any questions, or if there's a topic you'd like covered, I'm open. Let me know about it. All right, here are my final thoughts. You are not lazy. There's always a reason for behavior. All the sticky notes in the world are not going to help if you don't know which type of procrastination you are in. So first figure that out, and then you can apply the right action steps and get the job done. And with that, my friends, I will see you next week. The Now What podcast is purely for entertainment and education purposes and shall not be used in place of your individual therapy.